Hey, thanks for spending time with me. Rusnowski here. This is Porchlight. This is a finite planet and a finite life. But at the intersection of them, eternal possibilities through the resources of travel. Traveling is a lot like reading books. Effortful, disappointing now and then, but always adding to your store of experience and knowledge. Time across time zones is time well spent. It pays extraordinary dividends, especially with children. For many of them, it's the introduction to the concept that there is a reality beyond their own. Interesting how both the frustrations and the exhilarations of traveling to an unfamiliar place are so often rooted in humility. If I ever do make it to North Africa someday, to stare up at its unpolluted dome of stars, I believe it possible that combination will bring it all in focus for me. But until then, a large poster hanging on a wall just down the hallway from where we create Porchlight. It had once promoted an art exhibit of oil paintings from the golden age of grand tours, a time before the advent of railroads and steamships, when Westerners took to exploring the more remote parts of the civilized world. Yeah, back when the pyramids were really something. For wealthy Europeans, the destination was often the Middle East. For Americans, Europe. Human beings sensing a world apart, then moving to meet it, just before the Great Wars crumbled those bridges to bits. The painting on this hallway poster looks out over the Bay of Naples, near Mount Vesuvius. Perhaps the first half of the 19th century, or the second half of the one previous, this scene would fit anywhere within hundreds of years. Boats with sails out on the water, women mending fishing nets or preparing food. There's a small group of women clustered around a fire and a cooking pot beside a stone wall. One has her gaze turned away from the sea, away from the plume of the volcano. She is staring at the stone wall. The two of us connect on a regular basis. A distant time, a distant place, one life further away than either of them, at least from where I stand, knowing we can never meet. That's why I'll always travel.
Let us be lovers, we'll marry our fortunes together. I've got some real estate here in my bag, so we bought a pack of cigarettes and Mrs. Wagner. Walked off to look for America. Kathy, I said as we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh, Michigan seems like a dream to me now. Took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America. Laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. I said be careful, his bow tie is really cigarette, I think there's one in my raincoat. We smoked the last one an hour ago. So I looked at the scenery. She read her magazine.
lot of curiosity, a lot of time, a lot of world to see. That may be true abundance. Simon and Garfunkel there, an expedition across America, like having twins, something best done perhaps in the early years. Then the B-52s, without wings, without wheels. Courage and curiosity are both essential companions in traveling. My guest on Party of Two, Lynn Gilliatt, won't leave home without them. When you hear her global tales of the unexpected and the unforgettable, you may ask yourself, why wasn't I there? But just listen. She'll almost make you feel like you were.
All right, Tom. I have planted my feet in Bucerías, Mexico. That's the state of Nayarit. I have been to Peru. I was invited to help be a woman's roommate who didn't speak much Spanish. And since I speak Spanish, they invited me along. I have been to Switzerland, hiking for 3 summers. I have been to France to paint fake oriental rugs on stone steps.
Wait a minute. You went to France to paint fake oriental rugs on stone steps. What was the reason to do that?
Well, I had never done it. I didn't know if I could do it. And I was invited to help a new made friend renovate an old house in a little village. And she heard I was a painter, and she said, do you think you could make some stone steps look like oriental carpets? And I said, I don't know, but I sure would give it a shot. So I got to a little village south of Toulouse. We were staying in the granary. We were staying on the top floor because the house was not really meant to be lived in. So the highest floor was the warmest. Seems to me we slept in some of our clothes. We took paint off walls, we painted walls. I also did a mural in the bathroom, and I chose Matisse's fishbowl. That worked out really well because I had the right colors.
One of the things that's fascinating to me, some people like to travel for adventure. They may not even plan their trip very much. Mm-hmm. And then there are other individuals, and they lean more toward relaxation and rest and leisure, maybe the more predictable. In speaking to you, I get this sense that you value both. You value adventure and you also value leisure and relaxation. Is this true?
That's absolutely true. I'm not the kind who wants to get very exhausted falling into bed at night. I like to sort of move slowly like my dad did in his squeaky sandals. I stick to water. I like to swim. It makes me think that I am moderate in a sense.
No one who travels to all the places you've been can be considered moderate.
Is that right? What is moderate?
Moderate is hot water when you turn on the spigot. Oh. It's not sleeping in the top floor of a granary.
Oh.
That would not be considered moderate by most people, I think, in the first world. I noticed that many of the places you've been would be considered third world countries. You have to give up some of the comforts that you're used to here. Is that accurate?
I don't mind giving that up at all. I prefer to be cooler than hotter. Like in the Peace Corps, when I went to Nicaragua, when I got to choose my village site, I chose the mountains after living in hot Managua. I want some comfort if I can have it, if I'm giving up water and electricity. I was in a mountain village, Tomabu, south of Esteli, far north of Managua, where you lived in mud houses with wooden sides if you had wood. No electricity, no running water. I had a bed. A day would be like waking up to chickens or the cattle walking by my door. And then the school teacher would come in quite early. She'd have to get on a bus, come south, get on an old horse, which took about an hour to get into this to the mountains where we lived, and I would help her in the schoolhouse. After school was over, if it weren't raining and the rivers hadn't risen and she had to stay a few hours extra, we would sit and talk and eat. But normally my days just consisted of feeling the wind and the sun. This is high mountains in Nicaragua. The weather was perfect.
I want to ask about some of your favorite bodies of water that you've discovered, whether they're oceans or rivers or lakes. What are some bodies of water that have impressed you very much?
Well, I think it's the Pacific Ocean. And I would go to this little fishing village. It was called the Bahia de Banderas, or Bay of Flags, years ago, from Taos, New Mexico. Leave the snow and mountains and go to the beach. And really what got me going was I saw this thing in the water one day. I thought, oh, that's really far out there. Is it a shark with a fin? Or no, it's two arms. And it turned out to be Bob Dahlberg, a farmer from Kansas. He'd learned how to swim in the ocean. And he lived about two blocks south of my little cottage that I was renting. So I got in with this group of people, and we'd swim every morning. We'd swim from the front of Bob's house to almost the end of the bay. What he told me was, you cannot hesitate. When I say down and you see me and the wave could be 6 or 8 feet high, you have got to do it. You cannot hesitate. So luckily I never hesitated and I never really got rolled. The wave goes right over you and you come up right away because you're just diving in little short water and the wave is completely going over you. So anyway, I did this for about 6 years, I think. Went back to my little cottage, and I had a hot plate, and I had fresh fish and fruit every day.
How did you discover this small fishing village initially and decide, oh, I would like to stay here?
Okay. I encountered it through a friend from high school, his parents, Nate and Fern Hale. And they would go down every winter. They would spend the winter there. So they pulled that trailer down there. They hooked it up around the restaurant of the movie Night in Iguana, Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor. So they said, come down and join us. Fly into Puerto Vallarta. We'll pick you up and we'll take you to Bucerías, where they had their trailer hooked up. So they knew this place very well. And because I love Spanish so much, I thought, oh, I've got to find a place of my own. And was told I could rent the gardener's cottage. So I rented the gardener's cottage for about 6 years every winter, for 1 or 2 months. It used to be $5 a day.
Shall we register now?
Well, honey, you can register anytime you want, but I gotta collect $6 from you right now if you want your name in the pot.
$6?
Mm-hmm. $3 each. You see, out of season like this, we operate on the modified American plan.
Oh, I see. Yes. Well, we usually operate on a special basis ourselves.
What do you mean, operate?
Here is our card. I think you may have heard of us. We've had quite a few write-ups. My grandfather is the oldest living and practicing poet, and he gives recitations. I paint watercolors, and I'm a quick sketch artist. We travel together, and we pay our way as we go by my grandfather's recitations and by the sale of quick character sketches in charcoal and pastel. I usually pass among the tables during lunch and dinner, slowly. I wear an artist's smock, picturesquely dabbed with paint. I don't push myself on people. I just display my work, and I smile sweetly at them, and if invited to do so, I sit down and make a quick character sketch.
Mm. And, Gramps?
I introduce him as the world's oldest living and practicing poet. If invited, he gives a recitation of one of his poems. Of course, they were all written a very long time ago, but do you know he has started a new poem? For the first time in 20 years, he has started another poem.
Hasn't finished it yet.
The place was Erice, E-R-I-C-E. The village just drew me in, a stone village. It was a dark gray day. There were lights in the windows. I remember distinctly thinking, gee, I'd love to come back here with somebody I'm madly in love with. There was a place that sold sweets, and these were nuns, cloistered nuns, beautifully wrapped sweets, almond pastries, and I guess I'm sort of a romantic at heart, and I said, I would love to come back to Erice one day and see what it looks like in the sun and see if I could make friends.
That leads to my last question. You travel as an American, so you are representing not only yourself as a person, but also your country. From the many places that you've been, how do you feel Americans are seen and accepted abroad?
Well, you know, I think the people abroad really have more of an understanding of the American than we certainly do of the other. But I think we Americans might be getting a little better at going abroad. I certainly hope so, because we have to love the differences. You know, embrace, talk to people on the trains, be friendly. Don't worry if you can't speak the language, or be of goodwill.
Way down here, you need a reason to move. Feel a fool, running your stateside games. Lose your load, leave your mind behind, baby Jane. Oh, Mexico, you sound so simple, I just got to go. The sun's so hot, I forgot to go home. Guess I'll have to go now.
A small framed portrait, a lighted candle, corner shrine for one Ward Grinnell Foster. There is a concerted effort being made these days to keep travelers in the familiar while they explore the exotic. Over 27,000 Starbucks locations worldwide, with slightly less than half of them in the United States and only 4 in Italy. This particular tale also involves traveling in multiple business branches. It begins in the late 1880s when the elegant Ponce de Leon Hotel was being constructed in America's oldest city, St. Augustine, Florida.
Ward Grinnell Foster was brought down from up north to be the timekeeper for workers on the job site. Calculating and memorizing precise times became almost an obsession with Ward, and he found it even more useful when applied to railroad and steamship schedules. Soon, guests at the new hotel were being sent across the street to Ward's fledgling souvenir shop for their travel concerns. "Ask Mr. Foster" was usually the bellhop's advice. A good name for yet another endeavor, Ward thought. He began to travel widely, logging 50,000 miles a year, back when that was done on unpaved roads, lurching steamships, and one's aching feet. By the turn of the century, there were three Florida locations for Ask Mr. Foster, a travel agency booking, among other things, a 10-day cruise to Cuba. The Remembrance Store, on the ground floor, sold maps, postcards, guidebooks, resources that made traveling afar and abroad more comfortable for some, downright possible for others. Painted on the front of the building in big block letters, "Ask Mr. Foster anything at any time about any place anywhere. He probably knows." That couldn't always be Ward Foster himself, so the founder set up training academies in New York and Los Angeles for his managers. "I find women," he said, "are courteous, interested, patient, conscientious, and above all, enthusiastic in helping people. We tried men at first, but they are not up to it." By the time Ward Foster died in 1940, he could probably anticipate the next horizon: transoceanic passenger planes. Even more than miles or dollars, the real international currency in travel had become time. On many Ask Mr. Foster storefronts, the company slogan was printed up there next to a clock: "Time to travel." Both an invitation and, increasingly, the ultimate consideration. 75 locations when Ward folded the maps, with one still operating today, nearly 80 years later, in Morgan Hill, California. Yeah, a Facebook page, but it's still located on Main Street. Hey, nice to be with you. You're listening to Porchlight with Tom Rusnowski. Production support for this program comes from Smithville at smithville.com and from Gilbert Construction, remodeling homes since 1994.
Looking at the world through the sunset in your eyes, traveling the train through clear Moroccan skies. Ducks and pigs and chickens call, animal carpet wall to wall. American ladies 5 foot tall and blue, sweeping cobwebs from the edges of my mind. To get away to see what we could find. Hope the days that lie ahead bring us back to where they've led. Listen up to what's been said to you.
Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh, all on board the train, all on board.
Just to take you there, I smell the garden in your hair. Take the train to Casablanca, going south. Blowing smoke rings from the corners of my mouth. Colored cotton's hanging in the air, charming cobras in the square.
Stripes you love as we can wear at home. Well, let me hear you now.
Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Would you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. All on board the train. All on board the train. All on
Joseph's face was black as night. The pale yellow moon shone in his eyes. His path was marked by the stars in the southern hemisphere, and he walked his days under Africa's skies. This is the story of how we begin to remember. This is the powerful pulsing of love in the vein. After the dream of falling and calling your name out, these are the roots of rhythm, and the roots of rhythm remain.
Remember our discussion some episodes ago about getting a PhD being a little less intimidating if it was an accomplishment in place for mom or dad when you were growing up? I do know two people well who have traveled to Africa, north and south, Nile River, down to Mount Kilimanjaro. Just between us, I had this song selected for a visit with Bish long before the tragic news from Paris. I had wanted to play it for you because hearing it for the first time made me happy. When I heard it on Bish's show, a feeling of transcendence came over me. Not dissimilar, I think, to the awe people must have felt over many centuries being inside that holy space. I know I will never feel quite that way again, even when listening to this song. And that has made me even more curious to discover what else I might be feeling out there someday. Her voice, those ancient timbres, so strong, so very fragile.
April in Paris, chestnuts in blossom, holiday tables under the trees.
Chestnut blossoms, holiday tables under the trees, babe, April in Paris, this is the feeling. No one can ever reprise. I never knew the charm of spring, never met it face to face. Never knew my heart could sing, never miss a warm embrace till April in Paris. Now whom can I run to? Oh, what have you done to my
heart.
face to face. I never knew my heart could sing, never missed a warm embrace till April in Paris. Whom can I run to? What have you done to my heart?
April in Paris, from 1932, from the review Walk a Little Faster. Vernon Duke's tune, of course. Yip Harburg added those marvelous lyrics a little bit later. Ella Fitzgerald, Louis Armstrong from their classic album from 1957, released in 57, recorded in 56, with Oscar Peterson on piano, Herb Ellis on guitar, Ray Brown on bass, and Buddy Rich on drums, recorded out in Los Angeles. And Vernon Duke and Monty Woolley were having a conversation at Tony's, that famous nightery in, actually, the saloon in New York. And Monty said to Vernon Duke, "Ah, it's April, and ought to be in Paris in April." And Vernon Duke said, "You know, that would be a pretty decent title for a song, April in Paris." And the rest is history. Yip Harburg's lyrics came along a little bit later, and we have a classic.
For this postcard home, the postmark reads Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Join the Navy and see the world. But they were only extending the invitation to young men back then. A woman had far fewer options and far less encouragement. It might be easier to imagine the feeling rather than the circumstances. A woman enters her 20s in the small Midwestern town where she's always lived, a yearning to see the world, which begins just beyond her hometown's borders. The tether connecting her to her family, her community, grows taut very quickly. She keeps tugging gently. First, convincing the folks that taking a trip all alone could be successful, even if not completely satisfying. That brings us to the edge of this particular picture postcard, sent Thursday, September 26th, 1912, from the Cedar Rapids YWCA. Ernesta Blavin is writing this in her fine hand. She is sharing her first news since making a trip of about 50 miles from her home in Chelsea, Iowa. The population of Chelsea in 1912, just north of 500. The population of Cedar Rapids around the same time, over 30,000. So, let's not measure this distance purely in miles. Ernesta's immediate destination upon reaching Cedar Rapids, proof to her parents that she would be safe and supervised in a gender-secure environment, the Cedar Rapids YWCA. In the early 20th century, YWCAs provided temporary residence for, as the initials describe, young Christian women. They were located in large, medium, and small cities all over the lower 48. Many were handsome, multi-story brick structures located in the heart of downtown Rochester, New York, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Rockford, Illinois, Elgin, Illinois. The reverse of Ernesta's postcard reads as follows. Dear folks, how are you all today? Reach CR just fine. Going out to 1815 D Avenue today. Write me there. Goodbye. The beginning of a great adventure, perhaps. Ascending the steps of 1815 later that Thursday, a knock on the door. Then,
it opened. Yet another stray thread left hanging from episode 2, the Kinks, from their best-selling album of all time, Village Green Preservation Society, just certified a gold record last year. The band completed studio recording for this album on Monday, August 12, 1968, almost coincidentally, the very day before British Railways ran its final scheduled passenger route with a steam locomotive, departing from Liverpool. Ah, the places we get to go. the people we get to know. Let us always remember our initial reaction to them and then grow to laugh at it. The parting word, quote, "But there are people who take salt with their coffee. They say it gives a tang, a savor, which is peculiar and fascinating. In the same way, there are certain places surrounded by a halo of romance to which the inevitable disillusionment you receive on seeing them gives a singular spice. You had expected something wholly beautiful, and you get an impression which is infinitely more complicated than any that beauty can give you. It is the weakness in the character of a great man which may make him less admirable, but certainly more interesting." W. Somerset Maugham. And so, next time.
My father always promised us that we would live in France. We'd go boating on the Seine, and I would learn to dance. We lived in Ohio then. He worked in the mines. On his dreams like boats we knew we'd sail in time. All my sisters soon were gone to Denver and Cheyenne, marrying their grown-up dreams, the lilacs and the man. I stayed behind the thank you.
production support for Porch Light with Tom Rusnowski comes from Smithville, fiber internet, streaming TV, home security and automation in southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com. And from Gilbert Construction, specializing in restoring, remodeling, and revitalizing Bloomington area homes since 1994. More information about Gilbert Construction by calling 812-876-8110 or on the web at gilbertbuilt.us. Porchlight is engineered by our radio audio director, Mike Paskash. Our executive producer is John Bailey. Visit us at wfiu.org/porchlight.